Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Here with co-host Reverend Madeline Coburn of Coburn Enterprise. Madeline, a longtime advocate for prisoners, is very familiar with the injustices in this country. We are living at a time when justice has not prevailed. There is no man or woman who has not made a mistake in their lives. Yet offenders have been given very harsh and unrealistic sentences for crimes they did not commit, and many have been victimized before becoming offenders and then being victimized all over again while incarcerated. We are here today to speak out against the abuses, the suicides, deprivations, and much, much more, which is going on within the penal system in America. No other country in the world has mass incarcerations, nor does any other country in the world practice life without parole as done in this country, known to also be one of the few with the highest rates of human rights violations. Our guests will be discussing their own experiences as well. So I will also be introducing one who knows too well how important it is for criminal justice reform, and that is going to be evangelist and motivational speaker Gloria Woods, who is the author of Broken Shackles, A Mother's Journey. Since our last interview with Gloria, she has progressed even further in her quest to bring about awareness, justice, and hope. So let's also welcome Gloria Woods and Madeline Coburn. And I'd like to say one more thing. With this pandemic going on throughout the world, we have people in prison who have been kept in their cells for the past year and a few months even more, who have been kept in their cells 22 and 24 hours a day. These prisoners many of them have no access to televisions, so they don't even know what's going on outside of that cell that they are being detained in for 22 hours a day. They have no knowledge of what's going on the outside. And now the prisons, the Department of Corrections, are now making it impossible for them to even have any privacy. Since there has been no contact in the prisons with family members and with prisoners, these prisoners are allowed to have video visits. However, these video visits now, the video cameras are on the block so that when they have visits with their loved one, everyone on the block, including the COs, are able to see it and hear it. Mail is still being tampered with. Many do not have televisions. Many do not have their belongings. And they're stuck in a cell 22 hours a day while we on the outside complain about being in our homes and not being able to get out. Think about it, what it's like for these prisoners in a small 8x10, 5x9x7 cell. Think about it. We're going to bring Madeline Coburn on because there's some distraction out here. So, Madeline, are you on with us?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. How are you today?
I'm doing okay, just trying to get through these storms down here in Tennessee. But the line had, if it cuts off, it's not raining now, but the transmission of phone lines has been acting crazy. Basically, I want to thank you for allowing me, you know, as guest today on the phone. I just know that this is very important for all of us who have concerns and or loved ones that are incarcerated that have been mistreated. And this has been such a pet peeve of mine, dealing with the fact of it in, the laws and policies that have been broken under Chapter 217 in Missouri, that is the Missouri Department of Corrections policy for all prisons in Eastern Region as well as Western Region, that would be Kansas City area. But for the most part, what I'm having issues with right now is that the American Muslims, they cannot pray in the facilities without being harassed or having a hate crime done to them in regards to being pepper maced and not getting medical attention. And that's the consequences that has been given to them by certain atheist guards. And seemingly, the deputy warden that is over the operations of religious programs is just like business as usual. So I am presently working with outside organizations trying to get help for the families, of their loved ones that have not only been maced, the chemical agent was on their person for 16 and a half hours without any medical attention, and they were thrown in adult segregation for praying. So these are the issues. It just don't make sense every time I think about it, because now they're developing respiratory issues and they're not being treated for COVID. Not one of them has gotten the vaccination shot that Missouri governor received over $600 million for the COVID relief, but they have yet to give it to the prisoners. So, you know, with this chemical agent that is now inhaled in their bodies and they're having problems with breathing apparatuses, they're not getting any attention right now. And the guards that is working the shift has basically tried to instill fear for them not to continue praying, even though we're, you know, coming into Passover and all of that. You know, with Ramadan, they're just prohibited, so to speak. And if this is going to continue to happen, I can see what can come after that, which if they're trying to promote a race war, religious war, then that's seemingly the way that it's going to go in Missouri prisons right now. I've reached out to Representative Cori Bush, who was over District 1, newly Congresswoman, put up there in D.C. I spoke with her office directly 2 weeks ago. I was assured I would be contacted back last week so that the families can know what direction her office was going to take prior to me reaching out to any other organizations or the media, as which I told her. So I tried to give the benefit of the doubt, but they won't even answer their phones now. When you call, it says this voicemail box is full. So I don't know what to do or to tell the families right now, because this is where things are at. No one in authority is here to help with this situation.
You know, it's a shame, like you say, that you can't get anybody on the phone anymore with the coronavirus. And these people are getting away with so much because they know that this pandemic has everybody pretty much handicapped. The treatment of these people in the facilities are being worse than ever. And that's a sad, sad situation.
Yes.
You know, a lot of if these people that they're abusing did as much dirt as these people that are overseeing have done, they would have long ago been in prison. These people that are overseeing, because they have titles, uniforms, or whatever, they're getting away with dirt. They're getting away with anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
If that were me, and I was the audience, in addition to a lot of other people out there, loved ones, friends, families, advocates, the phones would be ringing off the wall. If I can't get a human body, I would definitely be bombarded in the media. I would definitely let the media know what's going on.
Right. Well, that's going to be the next step to take, because I've given the leeway and enough time, and only to be ignored. I was called from a personal cell phone from her office, from her district deputy manager, what have you, and she had no problem in texting me from her cell phone about setting up a call and wanting to get a third party on the call. But now I text her on this personal mobile phone, and she won't even respond now. I called the office, and the voicemail said the voicemail box is full. That's a concern for me, that the U.S. representative voicemail box is full, which lets me know. I see her tweeting and on Facebook every day. But to not respond to this horrific situation that's going on, I'm trying to prevent a religious war that's happening right now. But they're putting it under wraps. All they need is the videotapes to show what is going on. And this thing can be cleared up, but it's just ongoing right now. And as a chaplain, my hands are tied because I physically can't get to the individuals. I've often talked with them to have them email me their statements with their wet ink signature, and they've since done that. So I'm just trying to work outside of Missouri to get these individuals help with their families.
You know, Madeline, I have to say one thing. We know about it. It's been mentioned in the Bible, but there's going to be it's going to be a war. It's going to be a religious war. It's going to be a war between all mankind. It says mankind will bring destruction to man. What's happening right now, if you notice, not only with the African Americans and Hispanics, but also with the Asians, with the Muslims, all of these religions, all of these races are at war with one another right now. We have North Korea getting those nuclear weapons prepared. We have to watch it, because sometimes it's not until a war starts, until the whole country is in danger, that people start to come together. These people that are going to be trying to come together are the very people that are causing division right now, that are causing these problems. They need to get their act together. We know where we stand. We know what's going on. We know what's going to come of all of this. But I don't think a lot of these people that are so hateful, so racist towards religions and races, I don't think they really know what they're doing. Because it's not only going to be those that they're trying to destroy, it's going to be their own kids, their own lives that are at stake. It's going to be the entire. We need to come together. This division has to stop, and all of these things that are going on, and you and I know it, and we, I think we have, is it Sandy? Caller coming in?
Yes, it is, Leona. Hello. Hello,
Hi,
everyone.
Sandy, we were just talking.
Hello. I was supposed to go to jury duty today, but it was settled out of court. So I kind of am feeling two different things at once. I hope whomever this defendant was, that he did not plead guilty to a crime he did not commit, because, you know, that's prevalent. But yes. Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be with you.
Yeah. You were supposed to be in trial, but you know, it's like you say, as long as an innocent man didn't get convicted, that's the main thing. But we were just, Madeline was just talking about an issue with the Muslims that incarcerated. Were they incarcerated, Madeline? Yes. And she was just talking about the treatment of the Muslims. And I'm talking about the treatment of people of color right now, and the Asians, and the people of different religious backgrounds and, organizations. These are things that they were mentioned in the Bible, and these are things that are happening right now. And I was just saying, the people that are causing all this division and destruction, they don't have a clue what they're doing, because when the time comes, they're going to be wishing they hadn't started what they started. It's going to affect them. It's going to affect their children. It's going to affect their own loved ones. And what they're doing right now, because of their own hatred. This is the way men were raised from the very beginning. We have people in society that came from homes that were so hateful. People that were killing because of the hate, killing blacks, killing Muslims, or anybody they disliked because of their gender, their color, or their religion. These people were raised in homes like that. So how do they ever get love? If you're raised in a home that's so full of hate and racism, how in the world do your parents have any time to give you love and to teach you love? And that's
And you know, as a white woman, I'm going to say, my father was a preacher. My grandfather was a preacher. And it was heartbreaking to me, because I would ask him as a child, they came from the Appalachian Mountains in eastern Kentucky. And I would ask him as a child, Daddy, why don't you like black people? What's wrong with them? And he would say, go to your room. Go to your room. I remember my sister being severely beaten by my father, because when she came home from the Army, and this is my eldest sister. There are six of us children. And she was very isolated the whole entire time growing up. She isolated herself from society. But when she came home from the Army, she was beyond excited and happy. And she said, I met someone. And we were all, I was six at this time, 6 years old. We were all so happy for her, because she met someone that made a difference and made her life better. But once she exposed the fact that this wonderful man was black. My father beat her severely beat her. I remember her to this day underneath her dining room table, clutching on to the leg, well, our family dining room table, clutching on to the leg of the table while he kicked her until he had no strength left. I remember my mother saying, if you don't stop, I'm calling the police. But she did not call the police. She was very vulnerable herself. And, you know, I'll never forget that. That vision is with me for the rest of my life.
You know, that's sad. It's really sad. And I have to tell you an experience I had. I grew up in Austerville on Cape Cod, okay, predominantly white, had white friends. You know, we got along good and everything. Do you know, years ago, I'd say within the last maybe 12 years ago, one of the girls that grew up on our street, Gail, we were good friends. We were tight and went to her house one time. She told me this years and years later. She said, Leona, remember when we were growing up in Austerville and you came to the house one time? We came after school? And I said, I don't remember, but yeah. She said, when my mother came in, remember when my mother came in the house? I said, I remember your mom. She said, yeah, my mother told me after you left never to have you in our house again. Now, all of those years, we grew up on the same street and everything. I never knew her mother or her family felt that way, her mother and father felt that way. And yes, she tells me years and years later. And then I started wondering, because I hung around with so many girls, we used to play softball after school. We used to have all these games and everything. We got along good, and I started wondering how many others that I went to school with, all those years that we were good friends and everything else, how many of them were taught the same thing or told behind my back or their back until their mother said something. So we had hypocrites then. We had a lot of hypocrites back then, families that would smile in your face but didn't want you in their homes. I was surprised. But these things happen, and they're still happening today. And, you know, there's a lot of whites that have come to the conclusion that their parents were wrong. And they're out there now bringing awareness of the racism that should not be. But then there's also a lot of people who still have the mentality who were instilled to have that hatred in them. And we still have those kinds of people in this country. And like I always say, this is the United States. This is the country, the last continent, I believe it was, that came up of all the continents in the world. This was the last one. And this is the one that was respected the most because it has representatives from every single country in this one continent. This one continent should be the last continent to have this kind of hatred and racism. And yet it's the only country that has this type of hatred. I'm sure you're going to find some in other countries, but not as extensive as it is in this country. And it's not only for races, it's for religions. And I'll tell you, the Muslims came from the Middle East. That's where it all started. Africa and the Middle East is where all of us came from. And Madeline, you can confirm this yourself.
Well, we had to go there for my own knowing and understanding what it is about African descendants of slavery, even though I know that's a situation that Congress don't want to really talk about. Now, they just have approved H.R. 40. I don't know how that's going to go well over, given the fact of the economy right now, when it deals with reparations of what has happened to the descendants of those that were from the slave, their ancestors. But it wasn't enough for me to just understand. I was born in a state where was a slave, and he went to the Missouri Supreme Court, and they just looked at him as three-fifths. There's called a three-fifth clause. And that's still on the book to this day. And we can look at it by dealing with George Floyd and that Derek Chauvin case, if anybody realized that. But that's what they still consider as under the slave code. That's over 100, 200 years ago. That's why we see a lot of the killings that is happening the way that they are, because, again, we're looked upon as three-fifths human. I don't know how they came up with that. But I do know that we are classified as chattel. And basically back then, they needed, when the emancipation of slavery, and I'm not trying to give a history here, class, but I just know that some things are not right. I was born 105 years after slavery on the month and day, December 6th, of the emancipation of slavery being abolished. And what I look at today, and I'm just 50, based on what supposed to have happened back then compared to now, you mean to tell me that the slaves that were free had to get documentation, which are called breeder documents, in order to travel? Well, what's happening right now? They're now setting up shop to where everyone has to get basically a COVID passport, unless you're not going to be able to buy, sell, or do anything. So, I mean, when you look at some of the variables of what has happened in the past and then now what is happening presently, we are all part of this situation. I mean, I understand they call it the United States, but what people fail to realize is that the United States is a corporation. We are not a republic. And that's what people don't – they just fail to realize what is happening with all of these corporations that have sold us out, basically, went overseas, even the prisons so much, contracts that have been paid off for privatized prisons and new contracts that is now being developed because of new prisons being built. This is something that is not disclosed and or talked about, lest those are activists or advocates that are in the know and keeping up with what's going on in state laws. But the average people that are within the state, families of loved ones who have their incarcerated loved ones, all they want is answers. They're not involved with studying law and understanding about the violations that are taking place. All they know is they're getting phone calls from other inmates calling home, letting them know their loved one has been injured and is thrown into the hole. That's disturbing for any parent, sister, brother, uncle, fiance, wife to get a phone call, and you can't get to them because of this COVID situation. So they just treat them any kind of way. And as a chaplain for 27 years, I'm tired of it. I've seen it too much. There's a pattern of practice that has not changed. There's even a lawsuit, Bauer Sock versus Lawrence. That's already went to the Missouri Supreme Court about Pepper Mason these inmates for praying and they lying and destroying videotapes. Well, here we are again. It's happening again. And who's there to be held accountable? All of the state legislators is out of session right now, so there's no one to call. That's the problem.
You know, it's really a shame. It's really a shame. You know, there's only two ways people can go, and that's either good or evil. And we know what it feels like to do something good and to be around something good, you know, and to experience something good. And we also know what it's like to be around hatred and evil. And I can't imagine anyone feeling like they are benefiting by being hateful and racist, by being biased towards people that don't even bother them, people they don't even know. Think about it. I mean, everybody, okay, there was a world prayer going on one time not too long ago when this virus came out. Everybody was praying to end the pandemic. But what about others that what about praying to God just to give him some glory, or praying to God just to have him stop all this hatred in this world, in this country?
People are profiting off of hatred. So, you know, when you look at what's really happening right now, you know, prime example, the two guards that is in Eastern Region Diagnostic Correctional Center, they are known professed atheists. But they're guards surrounded by these prisoners that they pick the cream of the crop and decide who they want to commit a hate crime on. And this is something that I was a part of, a lawsuit that went to the Missouri Supreme Court filed by ACLU, HJR2, in regards to preserving the religious freedom of prisoners throughout Missouri. And here we are, exactly what the language stated is what's happening now, and that's what was trying to be prevented. Allow these people to pray with whatever God they praying to. Let them have that religious freedom. That's a federal law. I'm not understanding how state can trump federal. Prisoners do have rights. But in Missouri prisons, they don't. I'm a witness to that.
Well, since this pandemic, they haven't allowed, I haven't heard of it anyway. I know of prisons that they don't have no religious services. They don't have any pastors or priests or imams or rabbis, none of them going into the prisons. So these prisoners are not
I have not been into Missouri prison since March 13th of 2020. That's when they shut all visits down.
You know, this is what's going to happen because everybody is just, they've completely given up on the one being that's going to keep this world together, and it's a shame. But these prisoners, going back to them, it's a shame that, oh, and I wanted to mention what Sandy was saying about her father being a pastor and having that kind of hatred in him. That, you know, it says in the Bible, many are called, but few are chosen. And it also says not everyone that says, Lord, Lord, is going to be saved. We have a lot of Christian organizations that preach, and they collect that money, that tithing. But what one of the things they do not do, they talk about it. That's why Jesus told his disciples, do as they say and not as they do. Because we have people out there preaching the word. But Madeline, you were going into prisons, and unfortunately the pandemic prevented it. But look at all these pastors and these priests and these imams and these rabbis that could be going in and meeting with some of these prisoners if they have to wear a mask and if they have to do it through glass or whatever. We don't have those people doing that. And where is care? With all the abuse that's going on with the Muslims, where is care?
Now, in touch with the executive director, and the executive director of Missouri's chapter sent me an email today because we were on a conference call last week, and he's now submitted all the emails that I forwarded to him of those individuals that were injured by the pepper spray to their lawyers in Washington, D.C. Reginald Clemens made contact, but he said he needs my help to get him to write a written consent so that they could advocate for him and the others. So that's where we are right now. I'm just waiting to hear from either one of the prisoners so that I can relay the message, so that they can get emails to me, so that I could submit it to him saying, yes, we give you permission to represent us.
That's a shame.
Because there's no other way. They can't accept phone calls from them. That was the only organization that reached out outside of ACLU, NAACP, and U.S. Representative Cori Bush. These gentlemen are in her district, African American Muslims.
Now, what about NAACP?
Her constituent.
That's what I'm talking about. This is why, you know, I've heard people say, and I've seen it myself, sometimes you get more help from the whites than you do your own racist. And I believe it. We have a lot of whites that may be racist, but we also have a lot of them that are good and that are doing more than the people of color are doing for their own people. And this is a big problem because they complain about it. And they complain about the racism, but yet they're not willing to help their own people as well. And that's where changes need to be made as well. But Sandy,
I would love to speak on that because I think a prevalent issue, and you know, I'm white, okay, but I am also transparent. I think a prevalent issue that we have in society is fathers leaving their families. If the father is not in the home, the streets become the parent. We have to get that. And not only that, but you know, I have been told in my life, you're just a white girl. What do you think you know? That's very offensive because I do a great deal of research and I do a great deal of good. Most recently, there was a black individual that was incarcerated in Florida. He's been in there for 22 years. He has now been picked up by a nationwide organization that believes in his innocence and is trying to help him. So, you know, I wish we could get get past hatred. I know racism exists, but not all white people are racist. Not all of us are.
Oh, we realize that because look at Obama got in. He wouldn't have got in without the help of a lot of whites as well. But we still have a lot of them that are still out there trying to divide, trying to destroy, you know, and that's why I say it's a cycle. You know, when I was doing social work years ago, I used to say it all the time. You know, a lot of the clients that we had couldn't blame the parents because the parents were doing what they were taught to do, and their parents were doing what they were taught going way, way back. And unfortunately, this is a cycle. In order for this cycle to break, someone in this family sooner or later has to break that cycle. Someone has to become the big man and the big woman and say, enough is enough. We're not going to have this kind of hatred in us anymore. You know, we're not going to have this division. They're not doing anything to us, so let's work with them as well. Let's be a part of them. Let's call them brother and sister, which is supposed to be the way it should be. This is the only way to break a cycle of hatred and racism. That's the only way. And there's a lot of whites that have done that, but there's still a lot that have to still do it. And there are some extreme blacks and other races of color that have to do the same thing. They have to look at, when is it going to stop? And when they're racist.
I agree. I mean, there are still major amounts of race going on here. Major.
You know, sometimes we're
Madeline, I think I interrupted you, and I apologize for that.
No, that's okay. I'm just listening, Sandy. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, you know, while some of us gotten past that entire issue of I don't like black people because of their pigmentation, you know, that is heartbreaking because there is so much we can learn from one another as far as cultures and things that enrich our lives. So it's heartbreaking that I grew up the way I did. I wish I didn't, but, you know, my entire family has disowned me at this point because I don't agree with them or acquiesce to their beliefs. So I guess the thing is, it happens in every ethnicity. There are a lot of people everywhere judging people everywhere, and it's got to stop.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
We have, even in social statuses, you know, people in a higher position looking down at those in a lower position. You know, there's a lot of people that could be in those high positions if they wanted to. There's a lot of people that prefer not to be in those high positions because they're more humble. We have people that are looking white, black, red, beige, whatever the race. We have people that are looking down at their own people because their own people are not up to their standards. And who makes them, I mean, what are they? Because they're up in a high position, like, what are we supposed to do, worship them instead of God? But we have people like that,
exactly,
too. You know, it's sad because this has to stop. And it's affecting people in the prisons. It's affecting people in the communities. It's affecting people in their own homes, the homes of others. And there are cultures. There's different cultures even in a family unit because no two people are exactly alike. And some people are more genuine than others in a family. More, look at yourself. I mean, you fit right in with any race, whereas your family's turning against you. And sometimes blood is not all there is to families.
No, because then we have chosen families. We do. We have chosen families. The people that align with us, the people that care about, really genuinely care about equality and love and support for individuals regardless of their ethnicity or their financial standing. You know, that's another thing I remember about church is that everybody was dressed to the nines when they went to church. And I thought, why is this happening? Because really, God is supposed to love us the way he loves us, regardless of how we look. But that was always another issue. I don't know. It's just so sad.
Yeah. The ones that really suffer, though, are the ones that are in the streets and the ones that are in the prisons because they don't have control. You know, we have so many people living in the streets now because of the economical issues. There's a lot of them without homes. The epidemic we have in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. So we have a lot of people in the communities, in the streets, who are being shot down and gunned down and everything's happening to them. They don't have any control over what's happening to them, nor do the prisoners, nor do the babies and the toddlers and the children who are out there being abducted and violated by even family members, as well as strangers.
Yes.
You know, in the Bible, and Madeline can talk about this too. I'm sure you can too, Sandy, when it talks about Nebuchadnezzar. You know, we're living in Babylon, and we're living around Nebuchadnezzar.
Oh, yeah.
We really are. There's a lot of things that need to be discussed in this country, and it's just sad because, as they said, this is the last continent that came up. It's supposed to be the one that has unity between all representatives of all countries. We shouldn't even be talking about this subject because we're talking about the incarcerated and what they're going through. And we're talking about different religions. When it comes to Muslims, Muslims have been hard hit from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what I've come to realize is that, and maybe you ladies can agree too, we have a new administration, and this happens pretty much with every administration that gets in. Just follow me here. Imagine the new U.S. representatives. You got two senators to every state and a representative. So you have the representative, and I can only speak of Missouri at this point, that the U.S. representative is over the African-American jurisdictions, pretty much in city and county. And in this particular situation, just from my statistics of looking, we have a first-time U.S. representative in Congress. She outbeat an incumbent U.S. representative over 20-something years, Lacey Clay. And now I see her or her people, whoever it is, representing her social media pages. Every day she's been tweeting about the gays, transgender, and the Asians, and talking about the Derek Chauvin case about George Floyd. Mind you, I'm wondering how can this actually be when I was told on behalf of families that give them a week and they would talk with their attorneys and get back to see how they wanted to handle the matter with the situation at the Bonterre prison. Now, here's where I've looked at it. If you're new on the block going into Congress, be it senator or U.S. representative, you really can't move a lot because of the older seniors that are there that's been there longer than you because you're just coming in. So imagine like high school that, yeah, they know you're coming in, but you don't have the authority to change nothing. Prime example is that Representative Green, Marjorie Green lady. You know, they called her on something she talked about with the Columbine, and now they done stripped her up. Now, she's new. She come from Georgia, I believe, and came up there to D.C., but they stripped her of all of her committees. So I don't know what job she would have as a public servant when they stripped her of all of the committees. And this particular committee that I'm speaking in reference to is the Judiciary Committee that can only be dealt with through the Ways and Means Committee. So the people that we think we are dealing with, such as our U.S. representatives or senators, if they don't sit on the Judiciary Committee in regards to prisons throughout, how can we trust that they're going to do their due diligence when there's so many bills on the floor and here we are just a little nucleus of people bringing issues to D.C.? This is where the breakdown to me is failing. There's no bridging of gaps and bringing people together because they're too enthroned in trying to keep their position and doing a well-done job because of them being elected into office if these are first-time U.S. representatives or senators. And they're not going to be able – they'll talk a good game in regards to what the presumptions would be to do. But when they realize that they don't have the power to do anything, this is the outcome. We get ignored. We don't get phone calls back. We don't get followed up with, let alone we don't get updated on what the issues are that was complained about to them. Why are they even in office? I have no understanding as to why they would tell their constituents what they're going to do, and then when they get there, it's a whole different ballgame because they don't have that power. They could talk a good game, but they don't have that power to come up to D.C. to change policies and statutes and things of that nature. And if they get too raunchy, they'll be like that Marjorie Greene, and they'll be stripped from all of their committees, and there will be no need for them to be in D.C. They have to come back to their local office and twiddle their fingers and try to find something to do for the next 2 years to the next election. But this is what
wow,
I'm seeing
Madeline,
that is happening.
That's pivotal. That's pivotal. Why in the world is someone in office
when they are unable to ignite change, they shouldn't even be in office.
I agree. But this is the way
that
these policies have gone.
Wow, very well spoken. That was amazing.
But when you think about it, whatever atrocities you may have faced in your state or advocating on behalf of others, Leona, but you in your state, me in Missouri, it's a pattern of practice. And seemingly all of our information gets funneled and go to D.C. if we have to go that route to get senators involved. They'll get the phone calls through their secretary of legislative assistance, but that's as far as it's going to go. You barely seldom can get a U.S. rep or a senator on the phone to call you back in regards to what the complaint issue is, and you are their constituent. There's no respect. And again, when you have loved ones incarcerated, or even if they're not your loved ones and you're just an activist or an advocate on behalf of these situations of abuse of prisoners, families want answers. Not that you are the end-all, be-all, but if you are the go-to person and you make statement that this is the list of hierarchy I'm going to go down and make phone calls with, I'll get back in touch with you all as family members and let you know the update. Well, it's been 2 weeks now, and I haven't heard anything.
You know what I'm wondering? I used to wonder. I'm not wondering anymore. I'm kind of like figuring it out. Why every state operates differently? We have the governors responsible for the prisons. We have the governors responsible for a lot of different things. But when they have their meetings, like, they come together, all the governors come together. And I often wonder why. Because if all of them are doing their own thing, why would they need to come together as individuals to come together as governors? And the same thing with politicians. We have everything's run differently in every state, but we have all these people coming together for what? If they're going to do something different, why do they have to be meeting with one another on a national level when each state is operating on an individual basis?
Haven't you heard the term fraud, waste, and abuse? Exactly what they're doing, wasting taxpayer money, going to Four Seasons for a week, having conferences that is not going to be implemented back in their city. They're just spending the general fund money because they know that's what they have to do rather than give it back to the federal government. Let's just be frank. It's an economic situation. This is how most of them became fat cats on Wall Street, because of the politicians giving way to lobbyists, so to speak. They getting perks. That's what this is about. Because I have yet to attend any meeting in the state of Missouri that has been available for prisoners dealing with the Judiciary Committee for Department of Correction. Not one of them has taken the liberty to walk up into these prisons to see exactly what I'm talking about. They want emails sent to them. They want phone conversations, but they won't walk up in those facilities. I have a problem with that. How can you represent these very people that are your constituents that's moved out into gerrymandering jurisdictions, and you can't even care about them and see what's going on?
That's right. You know, I have a friend who has asked a government official many, many times to go and see her son who is incarcerated, and that has yet to be done.
Yeah.
So even though that government official was going to that prison anyway, it's astounding. It's astounding that they are so aware of what's going on. They're aware. They know. And they're not stopping it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sad thing about it, because we talk about the suicides going on in this country, in these prisons. And then look at what's happening, like I say, right now with this pandemic. These prisoners are being detained in their cells 22 hours a day. What's that doing to the mind? And yet we have a pandemic that we don't even have a clue when it's going to stop. And so this is going to go on indefinitely until somebody else commits suicide. Unless these politicians, unless somebody in legislature comes, or even the governor says enough is enough, we have to have these men coming, and women and youth, we have to allow them to come out more than 2 hours a day. You know, there's no reason why they can't let them out more than 2 hours a day. Especially if they're
something else American. Yeah, and something else that's very confusing about that is that some of the incarcerated individuals that I speak with on a regular basis or correspond with have been moved from prison to prison, and they're shackled together, leg to leg. I mean,
chain gang.
Really, they're not going to chain gang, and they're not going to let these people out for an hour to 2 hours because of this COVID, but then they're going to chain them together and put them on a bus, relocate them.
Yeah, Missouri has done that too. They've moved prisoners as far out as to Kentucky when this COVID hit. And speaking in reference to what you're saying, that's exactly what's happening, where the prisoners, when it comes to COVID, now this is what some of the ones that are in what's considered honorary dorm, meaning that you go 18 months without any conduct violation, and you can be what's called in the honor wing. And they work hard to get there. And all 9 of these Muslims that I'm speaking on behalf of is in the honor wing. And all of a sudden now, this is what has taken place upon them and their person being maced where the can is emptied on them. And they have no medical attention, and they're only in their boxer briefs and T-shirts, thrown into adult segregation, chained pretty much. Can't have any phone contact. All privileges are suspended. Now, you have to wonder, how is it that they work as hard as they did to get in the honor ring, but they're being treated just like general population? There should have been a differentiation. They can't even leave out of their cell in the honor ring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's
and that's what their complaints are. We're being treated like we're being punished. And this is the purpose in which we were able to graduate to come to this side.
Yes, yes, yes. They work so hard, and yet they're still being disciplined.
Where is the legislative members in this case? It just has to stop. You know, it has to.
Well,
you know, right now, another
gets
issue.
Involved. That's what's going to have to happen. Media is going to have to get involved to go and put the camera in front of these legislators' faces since they're being exposed anyway. You know, that's probably the only way that they'll come forth. If media know that they have been contacted and they failed to do anything in regards to their public servant duties, I bet they'll come forth then and talk because they want to get reelected. They don't want to look bad. That's what I'm noticing. It's a game. Whatever's popular, that's what they're on.
Yeah.
Another thing, there's a lot of empty cells in those prisons that they're not even utilizing. And knowing there's a pandemic, they should be using those cells to the max. There's a lot of empty cells, and they're still forcing prisoners to double cell, or else they're getting disciplinary reports.
And most of the prisoners have not gotten vaccinated because, as I was told by the prisoners, that they're only looking to give the vaccination to the people that are, like, really elderly or those that have degenerative diseases. Everybody else is fending for themselves. And that was a complaint that a whole wing got put on lockdown because they got sick because the nurse from CMS, who has the contracts in Missouri, she didn't use gloves while they're doing their checking with these prisoners. And so, therefore, to use one pair of gloves on all of these inmates that come through the facility to the medical, that's not right. That's not right.
No.
But they got sick. And all they did was put them in the hole, knowing that no family members can come visit them. So this is how they're being treated, mistreated, shall I say.
Mm-mm.
But that's what I'm on, ladies. I'm trying to still get the attention of U.S. Representative Cori Bush, who's a new representative to the state of Missouri, District 1. I'm hoping that she's listening to this call or her workers so that someone can take note of the situation and do something about it. These families need answers.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just don't understand how
I
can see her.
But you need answers personally as well.
But fail to respond to the messages that's placed in Facebook on her page. As soon as she has posted or whoever is on her, I'm sure to get the notification. And I just keep reposting the same thing. What about the families of their loved ones at ERDCC, the American Muslims that had hate crimes done to them by COs? I'm constantly ignored for the last 2 weeks.
You know, we're living in a country, it's about who you are. And
yep,
we know who runs the White House, and we know who runs a lot of these decision-making organizations and corporations. We know. I don't know. It's a shame. It really is a shame that, these things have to happen. But again, it's up to the people. It's up to the people to learn about these injustices. It's up to the people to stop making calls. We have people that listen to the radio show all the time, and people that don't even need to listen to the radio show but know in their hearts what's happening is wrong. And all they need to do is connect. All they need to do is reach out to one of you or all of us. This Facebook, social media, reach out to others and say, how can we help? Because there's a lot of Facebook advocacy groups out there regarding potential prison issues and the abuses and everything. There's one, it's something about being a voice for the prisoners. You know, these are things that they can actually go to on Facebook and join these groups and start coming up with some kind of conclusions to be a part of the, look, they have the National Coalition for Criminal Justice Reform on Facebook. They have the Wrongfully Convicted. They have Prison Reform Movement. They have Parents of Prisoners. They have the Massachusetts Incarcerated. They have all of these things, Incarcerated Individual Advocacy. They have the new Jim Crow mass incarceration. You know, they have We Are Their Voices. They have the Massachusetts Prison and Advocacy Reform. They have Prison Abuse. They have so many. All these people need to do is connect with these organizations, these advocacy groups on TV, on Facebook, and start saying, you know, let's do something about it. Let's come together. Let's start making calls. Tell us how to do it, because it's easy enough. Start getting a list of all your legislative members and in each of your states. Start getting a list of all of them and telephone numbers. Go on the internet and type in advocacy legislative members for prison reform. Start contacting. Mm-hmm. Start calling the media. And now we're going to introduce our guest, Gloria Woods. Now she is going to be able to talk about her experiences and her book, which discusses stories behind her book, Broken Shackles. So, Gloria, are you on with us?
Yes, I'm on now.
I'm sorry that you had to come in late the last half hour, but your time difference, you say, is different than the one that we have. So we had 5 o'clock.
I got confused on the
table.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Gloria, you want to introduce yourself and talk about your book and your experiences? We'd love to hear it.
Okay. My name's Gloria Woods. And, of course, I am an author of a book, Broken Shackles, A Mother's Journey. I also have a daughter that has been incarcerated since 2009, and which has pushed me to advocate for the areas of criminal justice reform that many, many people are having battles with. You know, well, it's been going on for a long, and I think at the end of, I heard you say about mass incarceration, and so it's just getting masses of people are being incarcerated, and so my take on all of it is that we really don't have what we would call a just and fair criminal justice system, but the only way that we can do anything about it is to speak up and stand up, you know, for our loved ones and other loved ones, people's loved ones that are experiencing so many horror stories. And so that's kind of what, you know, what I'm about. I am affiliated with an organization called Prison Fellowship, and they are celebrating this month as Second Chance Month and doing a lot of different things to try to get people educated on all the different things as it relates to criminal justice reform. I am a mother of an incarcerated person. She was incarcerated in 2009, and that is what ignited the book Broken Shackles, A Mother's Journey. And I know the last time I was on, we talked about some of the things I experienced. Honestly, to tell you the truth, I am finding a correlation with people being incarcerated because of mental health illness as well, and I'm sure you're very familiar in those areas. And I kind of feel like if I had got a lot of help and for her prior to the things that led up to incarceration, we may not be sitting here today talking and having this conversation. But it didn't work out that way. And so as a result of Broken Shackles, a Mother's Journey, it's about a journey of a mother that had to deal with an incarceration of a daughter as well as a loss of an 18-month-old granddaughter. And so Broken Shackles, a Mother's Journey starts where my then 21-year-old daughter was charged with the negligent manslaughter of my granddaughter, who was 18 months at that time. And basically my daughter kind of like veered away from the family. We tried to find out what was going on with her. We hadn't seen the children for a while. And we went to the home. We went to various places, but we could never catch up with her. So that morning of October the 13th of 2009, she contacted me. She came by my job, and she looked like she wanted to tell me something, but she couldn't bring herself to tell me what was really going on. And later on that day, I was contacted by the authorities saying that I needed to meet at this particular place, which, of course, was not my daughter's home, to find out what was going on with my granddaughter. As the night got, grew and grew, we found out that there were some things going on and my grandchildren were being neglected. And at the meantime, there was an Amber Alert put out. But unfortunately, it was a false Amber Alert, and my daughter had sent the authorities on a wild goose chase. And so, of course, this was very, very highly publicized, and we were all in the media. And, of course, because I'm her mother, I'm to blame as well. And so it just brought a series of very, very agonizing 2 years dealing with this whole situation and dealing with some of the prejudice things that occurred to us. And I say stigmatized, because I believe oftentimes this is one of the things that people get stigmatized. I say oftentimes when the person goes to prison, the whole family goes to prison as well.
Exactly.
And gets incarcerated. And so it has definitely taken us for a turn. I kind of got over it after the 5 years. But the thing that I guess affects me the most is that I now have a 27-year-old daughter that was a minor watching this happen to her sister that has never recovered, and at this point is dealing with schizophrenia and other kind of issues because I think she was affected by her sister's incarceration. And so I guess where I'm at now, even with the book that I have written and some things that I want to do in my future, is I want to educate and help people realize and know that, number one, everybody that has committed a crime, some crime, don't deserve for those crimes to follow them for the rest of their lives. Number two, that the family will be affected in some way by anybody that's incarcerated. And so my heart really extends out to family members and loved ones. In fact, I have a friend now that her son has been in prison for years and years and years because of the PRR rule. And now he's having seizures because so many times he's got beaten up and thrown against the walls, actually by correctional officers. And so now they're doing tests on his head to make sure he hasn't had some kind of head injury because of the treatment that he was treated in those prisons. Those are just some scenarios that as I have walked this journey since 2009, have found out that people have had to deal with. Is that really justice? Okay. No, it's not. And so, and then when if a person by chance, gets out, we still are holding that sentence over their head. But we said that they paid their debt to society. But have they really? I don't think they have in most cases, because there's still a stigma. And so Broken Shackles, a Mother's Journey is just one aspect of what I had to deal with. you know, or what my family had to deal with. But there's so many other areas that people deal with every single day as it relates to incarceration, especially if you if your family, and at the, in that particular time, I'm embarrassed to say, at that particular time, another scenario that we had going on in our family, I didn't have a whole lot of money. I had a job, but it wasn't all that good of a job. I couldn't afford an attorney, you know, and even if I did, I don't know, you know, I get this feeling that attorneys, are they really there for you anyway? In most cases, every now and then you might find a good one. So I didn't have the financial means. At that particular time, I didn't have an automobile. I was riding the bus back and forth. I mean, it was just so many things that happened in that area. But you know what? I found out that I kept pushing. I kept advocating, and I will continue to advocate. And guess what? I'm on the other side now because I can help other people. And that's what it's all about. You know, oftentimes, you know, we get so overwhelmed. And I remember that first night that I found out my daughter was, you know, because we never had anybody to go to prison. And I found out that my daughter was at the police station and she wasn't going to get out, and they had put her under $1 million bond and all this stuff like that. It was very overwhelming. And I didn't know anybody. I knew church folks, but, you know, of course, you know, they're not going to really help you, not really in that situation. But you know what? I don't want anybody else to feel the way I felt that night when I found that my daughter was incarcerated and was probably never going to get out until everything was over with. And so that's what I want to do with Broken Shackles. Broken Shackles, to me, is to help release people, even if it's not the physical release. Sometimes mentally they need to be released. Sometimes they just need to know they got somebody else in their corner. And so hopefully through what I've written and through what God is doing in my life in this season, and being able to go and talk to people and also maybe get into some of the prisons and minister to these young women and things, and maybe even go into a system so that we can be proactive instead of reactive. So that's a part of it too, avenues and programs and just even talking to maybe youth or whatever so that they won't become a statistic of incarceration.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I am getting a call from an incarcerated person, and I feel like I must take it.
Okay, go for it. Thank you. Yeah, I'll tell you, Madeline does what you're doing, Gloria. Madeline is a reverend, but she's been a longtime advocate for years, and she's been advocating for a young man in Missouri, and that's why I wanted to have her on the show as well. Madeline, what do you have to say with what Gloria just said? And I want to say, Gloria, I can relate to you very much because I went myself with my only one and my loved one who was never involved with the law before or never involved with substances of any kind. But one of the things is it's shocking to families when something like this happens. You know, if people are in and out of prison, that's one thing. You get used to it. But when you have a loved one that's going in for the first time, it's devastating to begin with. When you're coming from a home that's always been so well adjusted and so Christian like, and to all of a sudden have this happen in your life, it's a shocker. In writing books, I self-published, like I said, 9 books, and it was my way of therapy. When I started the organization, I let the books go because I didn't have time for it, and my focus was on trying to help those, like you said, you know, to be able to overcome some of the injustices going on. But Madeline, I want you to go briefly on with some of this too, and let Gloria know and the audience know your thoughts.
I want to say one thing. I'm back. I'm back. This is Sandy. I received a.
Go ahead, Madeline.
Is Sandy talking?
Not now.
Okay. Based on what she had said, I think that was a good idea that, you know, she took it outside of the courtroom into the books, you know, to be able to express herself freely, to not only have her the content or the narrative of her book is written. But is this your first book? May I ask that?
Yes, this is my first book. This is my first book.
Now let me ask you this: had you at any time ever thought about becoming a published author if, in fact, your daughter wouldn't have surrounded herself in, you know, this kind of situation? Do you think you would have written a book, or was it something always in you?
No, because this is the thing about the book. The book was not ever, and what I was writing, I never intended to be a book. It was actually just things I was writing through the process of all the emotions and things I was going through.
Yes.
I had a person that has her own publishing company that used to be incarcerated herself that reached out to me, you know, we need to publish this book. So in the beginning, it was not supposed to even be a book. No, man.
Gotcha. Because I was going to say, what state are you in, may I ask?
Florida.
Okay, Florida. Yeah, what I was going to, now have you made any contact or connections with any other book authors?
I have a few, but not recently. I mean, the book was
what part of Florida are you in?
I live in Pensacola. It's on the panhandle of Escambia County.
Okay. If I may say, because I don't want to take up too much time, but I would love to help you in navigating you through to some of the other organizations that is in your surrounding jurisdiction. I've worked with some of the cases that out of Florida with some friends whose family members, she just got released like in June of last year. She did 8 years down there. But helping that family, which is my best friend, it's her sister, that's how I was able to navigate through the Florida judicial system and get in touch with other network organizations. So I would love to give you my email address, and we can exchange and the phone number if you have a pen right now, so that Leona can go ahead and move forward with the show, and we can take this offline, and I can share some things with you that may be helpful for you to continue on in your journey.
Okay, just 1 second.
Yes, no problem.
Okay, I got something.
Okay, you can reach me at 636-336-2597.
Okay.
And the email address is Coburn Enterprise, that's one word, CoburnEnterprise06 at gmail.com. You can reach me at any time. Just send me an email, definitely with your book involved, and then I will get back in touch with you, and then I can just start sharing my network of information for down there in Florida, and hopefully it could be something helpful for you and even so much with your daughter.
Definitely, yeah. Thank you.
Did you get the email correctly? I noticed I wasn't able to keep up with it, although I do have it.
I'll repeat it again. It's CoburnEnterprise06@gmail.com. That's C as in Charlie, OBURN, the word Enterprise, ENterprise06@gmail.com. And whatever email you send, I'll get it. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Leona.
No, thank you. I'm glad. I like to see connections like this going on. You know, that's why I try to involve the audience, you know, involve people that once they get the knowledge, they see what's going on. You know, a lot of them may want to get involved too. And this is a way for that. And both of you might want to give the audience your information, your contact information now while we're at it.
Okay. You can find me, Madeline Coburn, on LinkedIn as Madeline Coburn, on Facebook, Madeline Coburn. My phone number to be reached is 636-336-2597. And last, my email address to reach me is CoburnEnterprise06@gmail.com.
Okay, and Gloria, do you want to give your information?
Okay.
And also,
yes,
the book.
Yes, the book is called Broken Shackles, A Mother's Journey, and I do have a Facebook page. under author Gloria Woods, and also have a Broken Shackle Set the Prisoner Free Facebook page, and I also my email address is brokenshackles3@gmail.com. That's brokenshackles3@gmail.com, and my phone number is 850-495-4834. That's 850-495-4834.
You know, I just want to say something real quick, and I'm going to let you girls take over. But, you know, I've been watching, briefly watching the George Floyd, the trial of that officer, Chavez, or whatever his name was. And I noticed there's so many people that were witnesses, white, black, beige, all of them, were breaking down in the courtroom talking about it because they never saw anything like it. And I know because of that, there probably will be a lot of people who will be totally against law enforcement, which they already are, many of them. But I feel the same way with the penal system, you know, with what's going on in the prisons and elsewhere. People are starting to wake up. You know, they're starting to see all these things happening that they know is just not right. And I think that a lot of people want to get involved in the reform and trying to find some kind of justice in this country. And they just need to know there are people out there like you, like both of you and others that are advocating, that are trying to bring about justice in this country. So I am hoping that through all of this, that you will be able to, they will be able to get in contact with you and actually try to get some help. Now, Sandy, I wanted to ask you as well, are you on with us?
Yes, I'm back. Leona, it's so strange. I got disconnected, and it said, thank you for joining Blog Talk Radio. The show has now ended. So I thought it was over. But so, yeah, I'm pleased to be back with you ladies. You are all so powerful.
Madeline and Gloria just gave their contact information. If you want to give your contact information as well, and let the audience know what you've been doing, and then we can continue with the show.
Yes, of course, I'd be happy to. My contact information, my Gmail is Sandy Fries, and that is F as in Frank, R-E-E, S as in Sam, E, @gmail.com. I also have my business, which is Victory from Chaos. I am a cognitive behavioral therapist and a neurolinguistic programmer who is working with those who are incarcerated and those who are reentering society from incarceration. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook.
I'm sorry. You started to say something, Sandy, before when you got cut off?
I am a huge supporter of what is going on right now, not only with the prisoners, but with the people that have lost their identities because they are trying to stand up for the truth. I don't know if something – can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, well, someone's beeping in. You know, I was saddened because someone tried to – an incarcerated individual tried to call me today, and I accepted the call, but then it was shut off. So it's sad. You know, they're not getting their mail. They're not being able to call out the way they should be able to, so they're losing contact with those who are supportive. That's heartbreaking.
I would like to introduce, we have Vincent Robinson on the phone with us, and he is in a prison in Massachusetts. I'd like to introduce Vincent. I'd like to introduce you to Gloria Woods, who is an author, and she's discussing her book, which is Broken Shackles, A Mother's Journey. And Gloria Woods has a daughter that's incarcerated. She's from Florida, and she is also a prisoner advocate. And, of course, we have Madeline Colburn on the phone with us, on the radio show with us from Missouri. And Madeline Colburn has been advocating for a wrongfully convicted in Missouri, but she's been an advocate for others around the country. So I want to introduce you, and Vincent, if you'd like to say something to the audience, please do.
Yes, my name is Vincent Robinson, like you said, and I'm doing a life sentence without parole. And we have a lot of bills that's coming up now to try to abolish life sentences. And I believe that a lot of people have a false sense and a myth about prison, because prisoners do change. A lot of times because they come into prison one way, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to leave out, you know what I'm saying, with the same mindset. I believe that you really have to have something that's very deep inside of you, and then once you connect with that, which is, for me, I say it's God, you know what I'm saying, because God has given us each and every person his spirit within us. And with that spirit, when we connect with that spirit, then we do the right things for the right reasons and for the right intent. And so it's not until we connect with that spirit to really understand about mankind and our position in this universe. And so with that being said, I'm just going to let you go ahead. And I'll chime in when the time is right.
Okay, Madeline, do you want to tell a little bit to Vincent about yourself? And then I'd like to have Gloria talk about her book and her situation.
Sure. Hey, Vincent, how are you? It's talks like these that really motivate me, you know, understanding the situation at hand and what one may have dealt with, whether they're incarcerated or whether they've just gotten out for, you know, whatever the situation is, and still not having the community help, so to speak. What I've been doing for the last 27 years as a chaplain within the state of Missouri, as a volunteer chaplain, because I don't get paid by the state, I've never taken a dime to do any of what I've done in helping families, getting them to their loved ones in the facilities, as well as the most current thing that I've been helping with the economic situation. There was a federal district judge in the state of California that passed, ruled on the case for all inmates nationwide to receive their stimulus pay. And in regards to that, that's what I've been on the quest of doing here, helping the inmates whose family is not well-versed in filling out the 2020 EIP, Economic Impact Payment Stimulus. It's really a 1099, actually, a 1040. And that's what I've been doing, basically helping locally in Missouri. But most recently, I've had some people that have reached out to see about helping their loved ones get what's theirs. Another thing is the actual abuses that are going on within certain facilities that have, quote, atheist correctional guards that have chosen to do hate crimes on American Muslims. So that's been another advocacy fight there, trying to get someone in authority to look into the matter before someone gets killed in this particular facility at Eastern Region Diagnostic Correctional Center. And that's in a rural area in Missouri that not many politicians go out to visit to see the deplorable conditions. But on the front end, that's basically what I do. I'm an advocate on behalf of ex-offenders and offenders that are incarcerated that are wrongfully convicted. That's been pretty much the bulk of my work, working with investigators, Missouri Innocent Project, Ministries of Justice. These are already agency organizations that are already looking into cases of the individuals and families I've been working with. So that's been giving me some insight on how they're going about doing their abstracts and finding the technicality, so to speak, in the cases that they have professed to be innocent. So those are just some of the things that I do. I've heard what you said, and it's always room at the table for us to collectively come together and bridge the gap, bringing other people together to understand what it is when it comes to true justice reform.
Yes, and Madeline, I would love to say something to you on a personal level.
We have limited time, so let me just talk about her situation, and then we'll talk. Have you come on? He can't on, and the time is running out for them as well. So, Gloria, do you want to talk a little bit about the situation in your book?
Yes. What I want to say is I'm glad to meet Vincent, and what rings in my mind the most is what you said about God, and I try to tell people all the time, just because a person is incarcerated, of course, that does not mean that makes them the person that they are. And so, of course, as an evangelist and as a minister of the gospel, I'm always trying to tell people that everybody makes mistakes, does stuff, but that everybody deserves a second chance, I believe, and that's what God is all about. So,
yes.
Of course, the book is Broken Shackles, A Mother's Journey. And the one thing I can say, honestly, that I walked through incarceration, so I'm able to put myself in someone else's place. It might not be the same situation, but I kind of can put myself in your place, and I give God the glory because I've just got my application accepted to become a part of volunteer in the chaplain program with the Florida DOC here in Florida. So I can go inside the prisons and minister for and help them if they need certain things done, or, you know, they may need, you know, to develop a plan for reentry, because I'm really, really proactive about reentry, and even for programs for people that may not even have the capabilities of getting out at this point, but we're hoping those laws can be changed so that we can make a difference and make our voice heard, because that was very, very important. After the book, when God spoke to me, you got to talk to these legislators. You got to let them know how you feel and what you stand up for and lobby for people. And so that's, I want my voice to be heard. Broken Shackles is about having a voice for those that might can't speak on their own like they normally would. So I give God glory for even meeting you, even on this this radio station.
Amen. Yeah, Vincent has actually been working with us in the organization. He's been doing a lot of good. So it's and he's been on before as well. So it's an honor to have him on as well as all of you. Sandy, you got ready to say something as well?
Yes. I want to say something on a personal level to Madeline, because, you know, she is such a staunch supporter of others when she herself has been through hell. I want to recognize her. I want to hold her up, and I want to thank her for what she's doing.
I wanted,
thank
you, Sandy. Madeline, do you want to talk a little bit about your situation being deceased? Madeline has been declared deceased, and she's been walking around for years. But Madeline, quickly talk a little bit about that again.
Well, I'll just keep it short because I know you're running low on time. But, yes, if anyone wants to see my story, I had to go before media, CNN, Madeline Colburn, CNN. I was declared dead 14 years ago through the Social Security Administration Death Master File, and I thought it was quite odd when it happened, because at the time I was a full-time student at Webster University, as well as I had taken on the notion to run for governor of Missouri as an independent Green Party candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And before I know it, everything that just started happening to me that I couldn't explain, sort of like a movie. Like, I don't know if anybody ever seen Will Smith's movie Enemy of the State, where he couldn't even identify himself. He lost his whole identity. And this is what has happened to me, and I'm still fighting to this day in 2021, trying to get someone in charge. I've gone through Bush Jr. as President Obama. I've gone through President Donald Trump. He did respond in regards to getting the Social Security to respond to me, but they have not moved forward in what they've needed to do. They've tried to sweep it under the rug. It's 1.8 million Americans that I know for a fact between the years of 2007 and 2011 that came up listed as dead. They were purged from the system, which means that if you go vote, you try to get a car, you try to get a home, anything you try to do with your name and social in trade or commerce, it's going to come back. The individual is deceased. So I'm listed deceased in systems such as Social Security Administration, the Department of Homeland Security, as well as the Internal Revenue Service. I've been trying to get records, Freedom of Information Act documents, so that I could present my case in federal district court. Again, because the first time I did it was last year, 2019 of November, and the federal judge recused himself from my case, therefore left my case unopened. Another federal district judge came behind him, closed the case, and sealed it. I, to this day, can't explain why, other than they didn't want the exploitation of me getting information out that was corrupt to show not only what was happening in the prison systems, but I showed the actual fraud that was taking place. And here I am speaking to you, this new Representative Cori Bush's office. Her people was concerned about the matter and said they would give me a call back, just as they stated they would on behalf of the prisoners that are being assaulted by correctional guards for praying. So I have yet to get any call back from anyone in the state of Missouri, from Josh Hawley, the senator that Governor Mike Parson put me in touch with to help with the matter. He's under fire right now due to the fact of his partition in the insurrection that took place on January the 6th. So it's a lot going on in the state of Missouri that there is no rest for the weary, but I do know there is a God that sit high and look low, and I'm not giving up. It don't make sense that what has happened to me, because I'm helping wrongfully convicted prisoners who have botched cases from corrupt prosecutors. That's my stand.
Amen. Amen.
So in the process, I got killed off working with a death row inmate who's now off of death row due to the corruption that took place in his case, and he's still fighting for his life to get out. But in the process of that, you think on this. How can a chaplain that's a spiritual advisor to many inmates, and the particular one on death row, knowing that he was getting ready to be lethally injected, I would have to read him his last sacrament. How can that be? The chaplain listed as dead, reading sacraments to a person getting ready to be lethally injected to die. That just didn't make sense to me. And this is where we are. I'm still alive and he's still alive. And we're still fighting.
Thank you, Madeline. I have to say, it's really, there's so much going on. And Gloria had unfortunately, she had to experience her own daughter being given a harsh sentence like that. To find out what the system and the injustices is all about. Writing this book, Gloria, I'm sure that Broken Shackles is not going to be your last book that you will be writing. I'm sure that you are going to be in those prisons talking about these things, and there's a lot that you have come, and you come a long way since all this happened. And I really, I want you to talk more about that.
Yes, I just, you know, when I think about everything that God brought me through, because what I guess I didn't mention was probably a couple of days after everything happened, the authorities, you know, coerced me to come to the station and said that they wanted to get mental health history on my daughter, and they began to interrogate me at the police station and began to show me pictures of my deceased granddaughter. And saying, what, Ms. Woods, where are your Christian principles? Why you didn't do more to help your granddaughter? And it sent me to the stress center. And so when I think of the thing that God brought me through in that season, and it was not easy. It was, I promise you, it was not easy. There was one occasion when every day I went to the cemetery and I said, God, why couldn't you take me instead of taking this baby? I mean, if I could really tell you everything I went through, but through the process, God brought me through, and I began to, you know, as I was writing those things, but I began to just write different things, but I began to see myself being set free, and that's why I call my ministry Broken Shackles. Not only for physical shackles being broken, but the mental torment that the devil would have us to experience, that we can be delivered and set free. And when you set somebody free, help somebody else to get set free.
Amen.
So Then he tell me about legislation. He said, now in order for, and I have never, ever liked politics. I never wanted to be a politician. I never want to have anything to do with politics. But God said, because I've called you to where I've called you, you're going to have to start talking to legislators. And I'm not a person in my natural, I don't like to talk, you know.
We're going to have to close at this end. And Gloria, I want to have you back on again with us. Madeline, I want to have you back on with us. Sandy, as always, co-host, I thank you. And we will continue this. Hopefully, we'll be doing this again in another week. I will check in with you, girls, to see what's best for all of you, and we'll be coming back on. Audience, if nothing else, I hope that you got something out of this show, as you always do. I hope that you will contact these women that have given out their information, their websites, their contact information, and I hope and pray that you will all get involved in this fight for justice, because we have a serious issue in Massachusetts and across the country, and we all need to work in unity and numbers to see this all solved. So I thank you all for being on, and we are now going to end this episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, hold on a second.
Hold on. That was a good show. But you know, it's hard to hear on this end too, though.
I know you got a lot of
I couldn't hardly hear.
It was nice that she had, because she has a daughter that's inside, and that's how she ended up writing a book and becoming a strong advocate. But she was saying it was nice meeting you, and that she could relate to you really well. And Madeline, that she do. You know, actually, I'm going to have Madeline ask you. Madeline Colburn has been an advocate for years. I don't know if you ever heard of Mary Neal. Mary Neal was from Georgia. Madeline's from Missouri, and Gloria Woods is from Florida. Sandy's from Indiana, But Madeline Colburn has been around for years, and Mary Neal became a strong advocate for prisoners when her own brother, who had a mental illness, disappeared. They didn't know where he was. Anyway, Larry ended up dying in jail, and the family had contacted jail to find out about him. He was mentally ill, and they said they hadn't seen him, but he ended up dying in jail. They claimed he had a heart attack, but they found bruises on his head. So years ago, Mary Hill fought until the day she died, and there were people watching her and following her and everything. But Madeline Colburn's been around as long. She's been advocating big time. But these are the things that are going. These are the things that are going. Okay, that's okay. Okay, I'll let her know, because Sandy, you see how she interrupts now. We didn't have much time, and Sandy's on all the time. But she interrupts sometimes when I'm trying to get people that are on it. Okay.